we're studying still Luke 14, verse 9. I'm going to spend a small time on what shame is and what it does. I'm going to repeat what that last thing we talked about, where it said, you don't have to come here, but chapter 12 of Hebrews, wherefore, seeing we all also are surrounded about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith, who for the joy, or instead of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of God. He endured the cross by despising the shame. Shame makes us bound up. It literally made him bound up. Shame shuts our mouth. It literally shut him up. Shame makes us fear we will be rejected. He is rejected. We are fearful of being mocked. He was mocked. We are afraid of being exposed. He was exposed. Shame makes us powerless. Shame made him, the cross made him powerless. Now, shame is the fear of abandonment. He was abandoned. His enemies used shame in an attempt to destroy him. They succeeded. He was profoundly discredited. His mission was shown as a sham. His followers scattered. It was a total failure. Shame had the last word and defined him. He and his words were scorned and cursed. And here's the mystery of God. Shame tries to get us to resurrection by hiding the shame. It can't happen. But it's worse than pulling teeth to have people admit, we discuss what shame has done to them. Many don't even remember it. There's when we were going through all the idolatry things, it was shocking to me how some people couldn't remember back past their 12th or 13th birthday. I mean, before it. I remember Gary. I'm going to tell us a Gary story.
Sure, tell it back
to you. Well, you'll correct me. Gary was convinced and talked about it that he had a really pleasant childhood. And I didn't believe him when I asked him to call his older sister. And what happened?
She never really verified that. She kind of took something and made it. I've never thought that I had shameful things in my early years. But when I think back, I was a miserable kid. Everything. I had friends. I had struggles.
Well, to me and others, it was dramatic.
To what?
To me and others, after you discussed what you talked with your sister, it was dramatic.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a template on our memory always. Yeah. But anyway, I don't want to spend any time on that, but... gospel see Jesus' shame and his weakness as the preeminent revelation of the power of God and the preeminent revelation of how we must totally and completely empty ourselves in order to share in that. We must become weak before him. The biggest weakness is empty. We've talked so many times about, you know, if you know how to do something, then you don't need, there's no faith. And we think that's the way it should be. And so we continue doing things we know how to do. And we think somehow we're doing it in faith. But it's really the Babylonian garment. The mysterious thing to me from my personal standpoint is things I was good at as a pagan, I'm terrible now. Maybe it's just because I'm old, who knows? But anyway, it's so important.
There is one thing that does ring a bell for me, and that was rejection. I experienced a lot of rejection.
That was the area that you
that
talked
was,
about.
That was the part that was a,
that you didn't remember until you talked to them.
Yeah. And that defined me in my inner self.
Well, it really was, if you think about it, and we talked about this many times also, it was the driving force why you became so good at athletics and,
yeah,
and gymnastics.
I had to.
You had to, because it redefined you. You got respect.
Right, I was somebody.
Yeah. And that same thing on a minor, on every level for each of us, we had to do something to overcome whatever it is. You know, this sounds weird, but the thing that overcame it didn't overcome it. I still didn't remember it, so I didn't really. But it overcame it outwardly was that Pet Wolf.
Yeah.
I mean, because man, and nobody, including my dad, messed with me if he was around. And that's why it may be true that my mother said that I got my personality from the wolf. But it's all of us go through that as kids. I'm going to go through here something in a minute that talks to them. We've got to understand, we've got to get to some place where we understand that no shame, no matter how petty or spectacular the shame is in our being, it still has an effect on you. But what the purpose of talking about it, and the purpose of confessing it, and the purpose of seeing that in confessing you're not rejected, that it creates a community that's not ashamed of shame.
Yeah.
I mean,
we despise the shame.
Yeah, I mean it's nothing. Now that's a difficult place to get to, but it's a it's, if you look at the number of times shame is mentioned in the Bible, it blows your mind. But we it makes us nervous to talk about it.
I remember the freedom that after a lot of us did talk about it, just felt really light.
Yeah, that's. I think that's when we started talking about being light as a feather. Because we also studied about the same time the ashes of the red heifer, and the heifer could only never had any weight upon her, even a little napkin. And we talked about how that the red heifer is each Seder. But that's what we time better. I can start it in that. We'll never finish. What?
You can start on that, and in 15 or 20 minutes, you can say, "How did I get off track?"
Shut up, Tom. The dictionary definition of shame: it's a powerful sense of guilt or degradation caused by some shortcoming, causing you to feel unworthy and immodest, et cetera, all the other stuff. Shame is the master emotion that influences all others. Shame can spur great accomplishments. But it can also ignite murder, potentially violent crimes. I would wager that a tremendous amount of family violence comes from shame. When one of the partners uses shame that they found out about their partner as a weapon, and all hell breaks loose.
I've had that thought where why men kill their wives, because the wife knows all about them and all their weaknesses and their stupidness.
And vice versa.
Yeah. So if they're divorcing or something, the man thinks she's going to go out and tell everybody what happened in the bedroom or some such. That's shame when you say it motivates to murder.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that happens a lot. Shame is the most private of all emotions. We've talked about it, but shame is probably the only emotion for which there's no facial expression. We talked a little bit yesterday about how in our society, guilt and shame are sort of kind of become the same thing in people's minds, but it's really we talked about it. Guilt is you're guilty about doing something or some act. Shame is a basis of self-loathing. Psychologists have a term called pathological shame. And it's when the same feeling of this incredible sense of loathing arises with every rebuke or small failure. It controls your response in all relationships because of some presumed character flaw. We've had people come through here that have that pathological shame. And they can't stay when it happens. Shame begins to emerge in the second year of life. Now this is, I'm quoting this book. Let me see if there it is. Yeah, it's The Many Faces of Shame, by Dr. Donald Nathanson, by Guilford Press. But it's this, that's where I got these notes from, that book, the ones I'm talking about right now. It begins at the very formation of the infant's sense of self. This is the point where the infant realizes that he or she is a separate person. Again, before that, there was no awareness of it. It was just... And once you become aware of yourself as separate, then you become aware of other person's response to you. And that Yeah, that becomes huge. I can remember some of the very first memories about when you begin to understand and read other people's response to you in the terrible twos. Pride and shame appear at the same time. Pride at pleasing others, shame at displeasing. The two sides of the same coin. Babies know whether their mother is angry or happy, but they don't know or have no awareness whether it's because of them. By 16 or 18 months, they are aware of whether the feelings are directed at them. And there's extreme sense of shame traced to early childhood in which parents did not respond with empathy and attention to the child. And all of us did it, striving to show our competence. And this one I will tell. I remember the first time that I learned to tie my shoes. It was like I won a gold medal in the Olympics. I was showing everybody. I remember sitting in the stairs and my dad patiently over and over and over again showing me how to tie my shoes. Anyhow, because the child feels that his efforts do not matter to the parent, the child, that's even in the adult, still feels inferior and unlovable. Any of this touching anybody? Zits.
And zits come off.
Yeah.
Zits. That's why I was lucky. I never had zits as a teenager, but at 70 I started getting them. So I'm being punished.
But did you make fun of the kids who did?
That's, oh, yeah.
That was the,
oh, of course. I did all that stuff. I was a bad kid. Still a bad adult.
Yeah.
No, but just think of those number of things that you just... You're constantly striving to be accepted and have some sense of competency that's acknowledged by others. I remember that I was as bad as Tom. I had to climb every tree wherever we were, especially the highest one, get to the highest point. If we were up in the mountains, I had to climb it to whatever the top of the hill was, or And because I wanted people, and then I climbed this high tree in our backyard, I fell, and I landed in my stomach, and it just knocked all the breath out. I thought I was dead, you know.
That's a tough one.
But it didn't cure me. My stealth continued to climb.
Been there, done that, got a t-shirt.
So, huh?
I've done the same thing. Fell through a roof on my back. Later, but...
Yeah, that feeling when your lungs don't work is not a good feeling.
It's a pretty bad feeling. And that happened to me twice. I gotta learn from that.
The problem is this process then continues of little trigger mechanisms that remind you of that unlovable, ugly, untalented little kid. And then all hell breaks loose. And then that's what happens is we have this whole situation where men and women decide that, men or women, in a relationship that their identity is defined by that relationship, and then we have codependency. And that's what makes people crazy when I've said that if you need somebody, you don't love them. You love yourself. you understand that? Anyway. And the spouse humiliates them on purpose. That's when they react with rage and violence. We talked about how it's an engine to success many times. Entire families can share the feeling of shame. Alcoholic parents, bankruptcy, suicide in the family. Even in my generation, it was even if you got a divorce. That was a shameful thing.
You know, just seeing how we all put on a front so that we look good. Someone comes along and humiliates you, which is exposing you for what you really are, and you can't stand it.
Yeah.
You'll fight rather than be seen as this real unattractive person.
Yeah, I can remember the times that people got most mad at me, and they were legion. Has been when that happened.
Yeah.
I remember when you got mad at me for 3 months and didn't come. Oh, you're probably mad at me many more times than that. But
yeah.
One time you stayed away for 3 months.
Yeah.
Nick stayed away for 15 years. But it is that. It's in the preaching of the cross. It exposes your weakness.
Yeah.
I may do it more than I should, but.
Maybe. That is kind of the essence of shame. The man of Jesus on the cross, he was being exposed for.
That's why I read that again this morning.
Right, that was very, very good stuff.
The implicit rule in families like this, but this one was a real one. My grandmother had an illegitimate child. I told you about that. And it was not mentioned in my whole, and still isn't. Now I talked to it, my cousin when I went to, and he didn't know about it. But it was a shameful thing. And he became the richest of all the brothers. He became incredibly successful. Because he was defined by shame.
Yeah.
But he still, I can remember, he helped me out. I stole a credit card and ran all over the country. I think it was $1,600. And they were going to prosecute me. And my uncle, I had to go down and have a face-to-face meeting with him. And here he's got this big desk, and I'm sitting there and explaining how stupid I was. He got this strange look in his face, and he said, "Oli, how could you do that? You're tall." you understand. I mean, he was not tall. Anyway. The single most powerful anecdote the cure for shame is when you can finally laugh at it. When you can laugh at your shame and you can talk about it and you're not ridiculed, you're accepted. In fact, you're accepted more. Because if there is ever a community that was defined by weakness, it is us.
That was the common denominator of every confession. person confessing, as soon as they learn about this, I'll be rejected. But there you go.
Amen.
As soon as they confess, everybody said, is that all? I'm like, that's what you're ashamed of.
Amen.
Had no power.
But shame will always persist in those that cannot laugh at themselves. And this is a quote from this Many Faces of Shame. The feelings of shame are also alleviated if the person can admit them openly to others and feels respected by that act instead of being judged by them. And that was the essence, the milestone, the touchstone of our best experience when we went through discussing this at length. I'm going to say one thing, then we're going to spend another day or so on this. But the cross declares, now this I'm done with, this is my notes now. The cross declares that we are redeemed from the shame and guilt of the past. And this is the quote. But God forbid that I should glory save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world. And when I tell you, when I went through that thing on Mark the first time, back way back then, about everything that we're afraid of, about shame, he endured. And when I saw that he experienced the deepest, darkest degradation that you can imagine, it was boom. And that's the same thing. That's what the cross has to do in each one of us. So you are no longer defined by that. You are defined only by the resurrection of Jesus Christ in you. Because otherwise you sit around and, I mean, it creates a loneliness that's toxic. So we're going to spend a day or two. Anybody, maybe this bring up anything in anybody else that you want to talk about?
Brought up stuff, but I don't want to talk about it right now.
All right. Anybody else? John? Do you understand what this is about? Do you agree that we should be doing it?
I'm not sure. It's up to you, up to individuals.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not going to force anybody to do anything. So I said it was 13 years before we did it.
It's over now. It's in the past.
Well, I know it's, but that has to be made manifest in the deepest part of your being. You can't get rid of it by ignoring it. That's what we found out. That's why satyrs exist, so that there's everything, that there's nothing hidden. And that's what, you can see why satyrs stopped. Oh, we can go to a big church. I'll be anonymous. You remember the three reasons that people go to the mega churches, that, according to Barna's survey? Anybody remember them? First one was they enjoy the presentation, the music. Second one, the preaching made them feel better about themselves. And the third one was that anonymity. Now, can you? If that's your goal in being here, you're a fool. Because it ain't going to happen. All right. Thinking these things. Take it, big guy.